If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Before we get to today's show, I wanted to tell you all about the new SoundStream app. It is the new home for all things sound podcast, and now you're able to listen to the perfect blend of music you'd expect from us 24/7. Jam bands and more, much more. New episodes of the podcast arrive at least 3 times a week, and now you can listen to your favorite artists and bands all the time in a perfect music stream. Just hit the play button and away you go. You'll be boogieing in no time. You can make requests, offer shoutouts, and even let us know when your birthday is, all from the SoundStream app. Get the app at thesoundstream.com or in the Apple or Google Play Store. The show starts now. You've been listening to Blue Monk from the Steep Canyon Rangers off their live album, North Carolina Songbook. The Steep Canyon Rangers have been busy over the last little bit, releasing two projects in wide release. The North Carolina Songbook is a re-release of sorts, having released the live album from their performance at Merlefest on Record Store Day, originally on vinyl. It has now found its way to the digital sphere. They've also released a pseudo-greatest hits record, Be Still Moses, that was recorded with the Asheville Symphony. We've never chatted with the band, who are bluegrass stalwarts not only in their home state of North Carolina, but pretty much all over the country. So we got in touch with Woody Platt to talk about these two releases, and as usual the case, our conversation wandered into different subjects, including this current state of bluegrass, the band's history with comedian and banjo player Steve Martin, and well, much more. The conversation started when I asked Woody how the band decided what North Carolinians to feature on the North Carolina Songbook.
We were sort of startled by, we knew the obvious, you know, the people right in front of us all the time, the Doc Watsons, and you mentioned Jim Lauderdale. There's so many North Carolinians that we were well aware of. But recently we had the honor and the privilege of being inducted into the North Carolina Music Hall of Fame. And when we heard that was an idea or a potential, we just dug around. And being North Carolinians, we were shocked to see all of the great artists from North Carolina. And so we just, then it was like, well, what songs from what artists could we sort of pull into our genre and still have them work, you know? And we could have gone further in either direction, but, you know, Thelonious Monk.
Yeah.
We grabbed Thelonious Monk and made it like a Bill Monroe stomp, you know? And then we grabbed Ben King and did Stand By Me. And then the obvious, we grabbed Doc and Earl and some of the people that we had to do because of our genre and our musical roots. But what a fun journey that was, because, you know, this band started at the University of North Carolina. Everybody was born in North Carolina except for one member who's been here for a long time. So it was a real great project to do. And the decisions, like we could do a volume two and a volume three.
Yes.
One thing to mention about that particular record is not only was it North Carolina artists covered in a bluegrass fashion, but it was also the first time we've ever done a live record. So we had this sort of combination of, we want to honor the North Carolina tradition and not blow it live.
Right.
And not mess up, you know, it was a big stage, Merlefest. So there was a lot at play. That was every one of those songs on that record, that is the first and only pass that we've ever played them on stage. So it captures a moment.
Right. It is so diverse in terms of the music vocabulary of the state. You mentioned Thelonious Monk. Did you want to make sure that you include lots of other things that perhaps Steep Canyon wasn't known for? Thelonious Monk is a great one. James Taylor is another one where, you know, James Taylor is probably a little closer to your musical vocabulary, given that Sweet Baby James is an acoustic track. But were you purposeful in choosing things like Thelonious or Ben?
I don't think we felt like we had to do anything. I think we wanted it to be broad, and we didn't want it to just be Earl Scruggs and even James Taylor, like you said, fits more into something that we would naturally be drawn to. And Doc Watson, we didn't want it to be so blatantly obvious where we would go, but I think we just wanted to be all encompassing. But ultimately it was about the music. And if the music spoke to us and we thought that we could do it justice and mm-hmm. do it right. I mean, if you listen to Blue Monk on our record,
yes,
man, it sounds like Bill Monroe wrote it.
Right. You know,
it's so cool. It's so cool. I mean, and we used to play a stomp tune back in the day called Oklahoma Stomp that was a fiddle tune. And we could have gone right into that from where we were in that moment. So, that one worked great. And Thelonious on paper is the most out there in the collection of artists we covered.
Right.
But the song might have been the most in there musically. That's really interesting if you think about it.
Totally. Yeah. Was it difficult for you guys to arrange that because it is so out there and you know, you want to sort of put your own spin on things, but you also want to stay true to the great Thelonious Monk?
Right. I mean, jazz and bluegrass have one major thing in common, and that is that the musicians within those genres speak the language.
Right.
And when a jazz artist plays the head of a tune, and then it goes around the circle for improvisation, then it comes back to the head of the tune. For us, it was just like walking in the park. I mean, we just grabbed that melody, and our mandolin player played the head. He twinned it with the fiddler, and it went around the circle, even through a bass solo, and then it came back to the head. And we didn't really overthink it. We just plugged it into the same kind of musical language that jazz already speaks.
A lot of people don't know this, and a lot of people that listen to this podcast would be surprised about Shake Sugar Ree from Elizabeth Cotton, because in many ways it is the basis for the Garcia Hunter piece, Sugar Ree. It's probably, and I've never spoken to Jerry, nor can I, or spoken to Robert Hunter about it, but in many ways, it is the inspiration for that song, for Sugar Ree, as Deadheads know it. I'm sure it's a song, Sugar Ree, that you guys knew. Did that make it easier to cover Shake Sugar Ree?
100%. I mean, for me, a lot of this sort of original concept and that song in particular was suggested by our banjo player, and he was a serious Jerry follower.
Right.
And actually, you know, he's a banjo player, but so was Jerry. And yeah. Jerry, I think originally the Olden and the Way thing originally inspired him to get into banjo, which then he tracked back to Earl Scruggs, and here we are. Mm-hmm. But that song, the first time I heard it, I was like, wait, I've heard this before.
Right.
I've heard a part of this before from the Dead. And that was fun for us to play. And if you're in the audience and you're listening to a North Carolina song, and you're like, here's an Elizabeth Cotton song called Shake Sugar Ree. And then think of how many people, when they heard that, they were like, oh, wait. Sometimes you come into music backwards, and that was a good example of that.
Absolutely. It's a great compilation, and I'd encourage you guys, whether it's live or in the studio, to do more of it, because, you know, it's a genre. Bluegrass is a genre now that is exploding in all sorts of directions. And yeah. One of those directions is covering songs. You know, some of the best covers now come from jam grass, bluegrass, however you want to describe it these days, comes from taking songs and molding them back into the tradition that is bluegrass music. So I'd encourage you guys to do more of that, because it's cool to hear these songs done in a totally different way, which is great. You know, there's the Earl Scruggs covers or the Doc Watson covers that we all know, those tunes. You've certainly made them your own, but then there are things like Sweet Baby James or Blue Monk or even Shake Sugar Ree, which are different. Or even Stand By Me, which are different but great and still adhere to the tradition of both the original song but also of the bluegrass tradition, which is so cool. What's been the response like to these tunes from your audience? What was the response like at Merlefest when you came off the stage and bumped into some of the fans or other people who were performing that day?
Yeah, well, you know, the record came out on a record store day, Black Friday, and then we've sat on it until a few weeks ago. We released it sort of on all platforms, and immediately it was in the top of the charts on the Bluegrass Billboard charts. And I think the response has been incredible. You know, it's sort of hard to tell because all of a sudden we're stuck at home, and we were in Dublin and on March 11th, and then the lights went out. We haven't done anything since, so. It's sort of hard to get a feel. Like I said, I haven't really been able to talk to the fans who have the record. But my take is that people are glad to hear the North Carolina history musically.
Yep.
And they're also, from our perspective, and they're also glad for the Rangers to do something totally outside of the box. Because we've always been a band that does original songs, our songs. And that's right. been something we've been proud of. So to now, like, be in a comfortable place where we can just play tunes, and I think seems like it's a good success so far.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. What made you decide to put it out digitally? I mean, there was the Record Store Day release last year. What made you decide that people needed to hear it in a bigger way?
Well, you know, I mean, music, the way people consume music these days is so diverse. Right. And we're not in a position to be that much of a connoisseurs type band. So we weren't just comfortable delivering it only to the audiophiles who have turntables.
Right.
It was a really cool way to introduce it. And it went great and we loved it. And it was slick and it was something that we were proud of. But, you know, in the end, we need to make it available digitally on CD. I mean, if you want me to put it on a cassette, I'll do it. You know, I mean, we need to make the music available because everybody is getting it in different ways, but mostly digitally.
Yes, true enough. Switching gears, because it is it's actually not that much of a switch. Be Still Moses is this 11-song collaboration between the band and the Asheville Symphony. What was the impetus for that project?
Well, over the years, you know, we tour with Steve Martin, and we have toured with him a lot. Mm-hmm. And at some point in that journey, he started doing symphony shows. And so we cut our teeth on the thrill of playing a song with a 60, 70 piece orchestra behind you.
Yes.
And we thought, you know, we can do that. We should do that on our own. So we charted our own music and made that a thing. And we pitched it to some buyers, and we've done a dozen or so of them around the country. And in that process, it caught the eye of the Asheville Symphony. And they reached out to us, and that's our home turf. Asheville, North Carolina, and Brevard, North Carolina are our turf. Mm-hmm. Where we're from. And so we agreed, and it was a really easy project. It was pick 10 or 11 of your favorite songs from your career. So we redid sort of our greatest hits, I guess, the songs that we, at least that we liked. And that was the idea of it. And it was really easy and wonderful. We knew the tunes, and we got great orchestrators maestros. Yeah, we got great performers. We also had great orchestrators to write the charts. And uh-huh. that's the key to a symphony collaboration is, like, do they get the idea of the song? Is it going to sound like a movie, or is it going to sound like a song? You know, like, what are you going to do? And we're happy with the charts.
Yeah, I wonder how much of a stretch it was to do these charts. And I only ask that because there is a lot of strings already in bluegrass music and in your music, and so, you know, adding violin or adding bass or adding any other string instruments couldn't have been that difficult. It's all the other instrumentation that must have been a bolder task, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing we learned when picking the tunes which we wanted to be on the record and we wanted to get charts of is that the really fast kind of banjo driven driving bluegrass where everybody's firing is tricky for a conductor to keep up with and 75 people to sort of collide in this space of perfect time.
Right.
So we sort of lean towards tunes that were more emotional and a little bit more open. And that also opened up space for what you're talking of is, like, other instruments that could fill in, you know, horns and oboes, and there's beautiful moments. And then one thing we really want to do is feature the symphony, much like in bluegrass, you feature a solo.
Yes.
We wanted to feature the symphony. So we built in intros and interludes into our tunes where it's like, all right, symphony solo. And even on the show live, we just walk off. Right. In the middle of a song, we just leave the stage and we have the lighting adjust to them. And there's a long symphony solo. And then we walk back up like it was their moment and then go back to the song. So it's been a lot of fun, I'm telling you, to do that.
I'm curious about the Boys to Men edition. I think they had been doing something with the symphony and that's how you got introduced to them. How did you get, I mean, everybody knows Boys to Men. Everybody knows what accomplished musicians they are and what tremendous vocalists and harmonizers they are. But the pairing of a bluegrass band with a straight ahead R&B band is foreign for both R&B fans and R&B listeners and bluegrass fans and bluegrass listeners. So I'm curious how that kind of came together.
Yeah, I can't even believe it happened. It's incredible. It came down, it's as simple as this. We have a song called Be Still Moses, and we wanted to have a guest vocalist. And so we had kicked around some ideas. Mavis Staples and Gladys Knight were a couple ideas of somebody that could sing the melody, and then we would just build our harmonies because we sing it as a quartet.
Yeah.
And our producer said, hey, man, he called me one day. He said, I've got the greatest idea, Boys to Men. And I was like, you know, I grew up in that era. I was like, wait, are you serious? He said, actually, I am. I'm friends with their manager, and we used to work together. He said, I think they'll love it. And I said, get them. If you can get them, get them. and he sent it to them, and we got word back a few weeks later that they were kind of moved by the idea and the song, and they wanted to collaborate outside of the genre. And it happened. And they, man, they sang it so well. And then they mixed it where we were trading verses.
Yeah.
And then we performed it live in Nashville with them. So it's a cool cut. I encourage people that are tuning in here to take a listen to that. If you want to hear a collision of two genres.
It's gorgeous. And you know, what's interesting. And this is certainly the case with the former project, the North Carolina Songbook. All of us now, I think, are listening to so much more music because we have access to so much more than just our favorite, you know, necessarily our favorite bands or our favorite genre, that we have access to go back and listen and remember how incredible those Boys to Men records are, or how incredible, you know, their fans might see some of your older material. And then the collaboration now is just outstanding. And those are things that, you know, probably in the world of the traditional record label or the traditional way of doing radio or whatever, those things may not have come about. But because we live in this new world where we have access to Spotify and iTunes and YouTube and this crazy world of music, these compilations are more realistic at this point, right?
100%. I mean, we're connected in so many ways that we've never been connected, and we consume music, any kinds of entertainment, and just, it's just always in front of us. So there's no better time to mash it all together.
That's probably true too for the Steve Martin project. And I haven't had a chance to talk to you about it, but I'm curious about, you know, we always have known that Steve has dabbled in banjo, and he's quite an accomplished player. I mean, he's not just somebody who does this as a hobby. He's got it down. He knows what he's doing on that instrument. I'm curious how, and I'm sure you've told this story hundreds of times, thousands of times, but not to me and not to our audience necessarily. How did you hook up with Steve? And I'll get to subsequent questions, but how did you first hook up with Steve to work on collaborating with him?
Well, yeah, I've boiled this down, this story, because it's been told many times, but the short of it is that Steve's wife was a friend of ours before she knew Steve. So we have history with Steve's wife as a friend of the band.
Yes.
And she moved to New York City. Somehow they met, and she called me one random fall afternoon and said, I'm coming to Brevard. I knew she was dating Steve at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm coming to Brevard, where we live, and I'm bringing Steve for vacation. Do you mind getting some of the boys and coming up and having a jam session? And so I'd never met him. He was in the mountains in some little cabin, and I rolled in with just our mandolin player and myself. And we just had an informal, like you would have an informal bluegrass session.
Yeah.
And it never let up from there on. I mean, he called me the next week and we were constantly getting excited about when we were going to come to New York as a band and he could sit in. And then when he was going to be back in town and he could sit in, he was emailing me songs, so excited about it. And we got excited and the relationship has never loosened up. And that was a decade ago.
There are so many interesting projects that you're involved in. Are you guys constantly writing music for yourselves, constantly thinking about taking Steep Canyon Rangers to the next step? What is that next step? You know, with so much bluegrass music being out there now, now is the time for you guys to really make a push probably, and you probably feel that. Is that the plan moving forward? I mean, COVID aside and all of the nonsense associated with that and the certainly the grounding of you guys for a little bit. Is that the plan, is to go big or go home at this point with more material and more touring and such?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a new record. We just turned in the masters yesterday and it's a go big or go home kind of record. You know, we made it at Southern Ground in Nashville and it's us, our songs, but it's big. It's just got the teeth, you know, of something that we haven't quite put out there yet. And we're finishing it like all is normal. You know, we're feeling urgency and we want to just tour and the band is ready to do it, you know? So yeah, I'd say, you know, like you said, it's a good time for this genre and we feel like we're well positioned and ultimately we just want to make good music and send it to the people.
What do you make of sort of this resurgence, you know, with bands like the Dusters and Green Sky and Railroad Earth, who have been on the scene for a long time, Leftover Salmon, you know these bands, you've grew up listening to these bands, you still listen to these bands probably. What do you make of kind of this groundswell, this really exciting groundswell of this genre, you know, coming up?
I mean, I think it's just a result of good music. I think all of a sudden there's a lot of really good bands that fit under the same roof. Yeah. And so that genre is getting becoming validated in a way that maybe before there was just Leftover. And mm-hmm. oh wait, here comes Railroad Earth and here comes Green Sky and here comes the Dusters. And we've kind of been all around it. We were real traditional for a lot of years and now we've sort of, you know, I don't know how we fit into that, but we do. And, you know, and it's funny, we're here in the mountains and the bass player for the Dusters and my son are in preschool together. And mm-hmm. we're right here, you know, so there's a lot of sort of behind the scenes intermingling and friendships are developed. And, but I think ultimately it's just that there's a lot of bands making really good music. And that is just one thing fuels the other.
The other thing is that there are up and comers, you know, Billy Strings is this incredible picker who is young and he has taken to this kind of music. And, you know, you listen to Billy and he has all the knowledge and all the understanding of who's come before him, but yet he plays his instrument like a Jimi Hendrix, like he's on that crazy level of picking. And, you know, we haven't seen pickers like that in a really long time. That's got to be exciting too for you to see the young kids take hold of what's going on.
I'm fascinated by Billy Strings. I think he's a supreme talent that doesn't come along very often. And the sky's the limit for him. You know, he's just got an energy and, you know, you don't often see such a great picker also be such a great singer and a charismatic band leader. Mm-hmm. I think he's solid gold, that guy.
So the plan is to get this album mixed and released and get on the road, I assume, as soon as you can, right? Is that sort of the plan at this point?
Yeah, that's the plan. You know, everybody in the industry is doing the same thing. We're just punting all of our shows into the fall and into the next year. And it's really scary. It's a scary time to be a band that makes 100% of your income delivering the music live to the people. when you need large groups of people to come together.
Yeah, yeah.
To hear it. So, you know, we're just trying to figure out this new world, and something's going to happen. But, you know, I just confirmed offers for October yesterday. Whether that happens or not, it's an optimistic approach.
When can fans expect to hear the new record?
So I just saw sort of a, and this is the first time I've talked about this, but I just saw a label sort of strategy. And it looks like early July, we will start dropping singles.
Cool.
Sort of bi-weekly leading up to a early fall release. Great. So it's a fun approach. And we're with Yep Rock Records, and I think they have an incredible team, and the way they want to deliver the music is very progressive. So people will hear single after single before the record drops.
Well, I can tell you that I'm really psyched. It's funny. It for me personally, the genre has kind of ebbed and flowed over my personal experience. And, you know, I got into bluegrass music because of Jerry, because of wanting to hear Earl Scruggs and Doc Watson and all of that stuff. But now with all of these incredible bands, and Sam Bush, and all of these incredible bands making music, it's hard not to pay attention. And it's hard not to pay attention to guys who have been doing this for a long time and have an up and comers and an opportunity to reach a larger audience. So I congratulate you on the last two records that are phenomenal records. And I can't wait to hear the new stuff. Thanks for taking the time. And I'm sure we'll be in touch real soon when the new record comes out.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for your passion with the music.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, too. Be well, Woody, and we'll talk real soon, I guess.
You too. Thank you so much.
What a great chat with Woody Platt. I can tell you that he was very engaged in our conversation, and I'm so glad we had him on to talk about these two projects that are currently out, and I'm glad he told us about the new album in the offing. To learn more about the Steep Canyon Rangers, visit steepcanyon.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to Be Still Moses, featuring Boyz II Men and the Asheville Symphony from the album of the same name.
She walks past the soldiers out in the street, stays to the side with her eyes on her feet. She hardly makes a whisper, just barely a word. This was all the baby heard.
Moses, don't make a sound. Be still, Moses, don't make a sound. Be still, Moses, don't make a sound. Keep your head down.
Flows, a baby's crying for a mother that he'll never know.
She says to Pharaoh, "Won't you to die? So I'm leaving you here if you're gonna survive."
Be still, Moses, don't make a sound.
Be still, Moses, don't make a sound.
Be still, Moses, don't make a sound.
Don't make a sound.
Keep your head down.
Be quiet.
Don't make
make a sound. Don't be still, Moses. Don't make a sound.
She said, be still, Moses.
Don't make a sound.
Don't make a sound.
Keep your head down.
Keep your head down.
Keep your head down.
Keep your head down.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.